ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I actually feel grateful that I went through this experience because it taught me so much about understanding myself. So I think my life's probably better than what it was before I went through this experience.
Wow, that's a huge admission to make.
Hi, I'm Sabra Lane and this is The Bright Side, a podcast bringing you stories of hope from all across Australia. It's about the people trying to fix problems, and that might even inspire you and other communities to look for your own solutions too. In this episode...
Amazing! We got all four! That's so great!
It's my life. I do things that make me happy. Don't think about other people's opinions too much because they don't have to live your life, you do.
For those listening, what do you want them to get out of your story and experience?
A sense of hope.
This is a podcast about problems and solutions. And well, it's also a podcast about hope. In this episode, we're going to dig into a big problem, persistent or chronic pain. It's something that affects nearly 3.5 million Australians. And that's a huge number. It's likely that you know someone, or you might be living with someone with chronic pain. There is no way of stopping it when you've got it. And often people have tried all sorts of pills, potions, heat bags, physio, acupuncture, even surgery to try and stop it. In fact, it might even be you. There are plenty of terrible examples of people who've been promised fixes, even surgery, without any evidence that they work, and sufferers who are desperate for the pain to stop. And guess what? In many cases, it just doesn't work. Now, every person's experience of pain is different, and it's really important to say this segment shouldn't be taken as your own personal medical advice about what you should do. I am not a doctor. You should talk with your own GP about chronic pain. However, I reckon Lauren Cannell's experience is worth sharing widely. Lauren, thanks for talking to The Bright Side.
Thank you for having me.
I want you to give us a snapshot of what life was like when pain was at its peak compared with your life right now.
Well, when my persistent pain was at its peak, life was actually pretty grim. I was very limited in what I could do. I went from working full-time as a police officer to missing large stretches of time at work, sometimes weeks at a time. I was very limited in what I could do socially, and my life pretty much revolved around trying to manage and trying to fix the pain.
Gosh, that must have been dreadful, because you were pretty much, looking at your CV, you were a Wonder Woman. You were running marathons and so much energy and A-type personality, going from that to someone who could barely walk to the front gate. That must have been a really lonely feeling.
It was a massive change in my life. As you say, I was very active, and physical activity and endurance events were a big part of my life. And when that gets taken away, it really has an impact on your self-confidence and changes everything that you do during the day.
Look, what were you trying to do to try and solve this pain?
Oh, I went through all sorts of different approaches, you know, the whole no pain, no gain, work your way through it, you'll eventually get through it. Then I started going down, you know, the medical road where I was using medication. I saw allied health professionals. I went to physios and osteos. I had pain interventions like nerve blocks, cortisone injections, and eventually I had surgery. Lots of different passive type actions where I was getting acupuncture and massage and trying all sorts of herbal remedies, things like that.
Four Corners recently put the spotlight on some surgical options that people with back pain are choosing to try and fix their back pain. Unfortunately, some of them end up in even a worse condition. Mm. And it's no solution at all. And some of these, you know, the episode pointed out a lot of this surgery is not peer-reviewed. It's not been put through a process where they find out whether it actually works or not. It can be really very desperate for people. How did you start on your journey away from pills, potions and everything else when you had that moment of, aha, something else is going on here?
That switch took a little while, but it really started with a visit to an exercise physiologist who actually had the time to spend with me, which a lot of the other medical practitioners I had seen are very limited on time. You know, you might have 15 minutes in a visit if you're lucky, whereas I had an hour with this particular exercise physiologist, and he sat me down and spent most of the hour just talking to me and really getting my history and understanding the trauma that I had from what I'd been through, and the fear that I had around the pain and the anxiety. And he said to me something which no one had said before, which was, I think all of your injuries have healed and what you're experiencing is chronic pain.
So tell me then, what happened next when you had that realization that, yeah, I think that's me. What happened next, and how have you come now? Do you live a life virtually pain-free now, yeah?
Yes, I still get pain at times, and typically that's when I'm going through a lot of stress, but I consider myself as recovered. And that took work in the form of looking more at the psychological approach to what was going on and trying to retrain my brain that I was safe, and so that it would start reducing the pain messages it was sending to my body.
Your brain was overworking and it was trying to protect you.
Absolutely.
It's pretty remarkable, though, that you've come from that position, not being able to walk to your front gate, to now living a very healthy, productive life where occasionally you get a bit of pain, but it's all manageable. That's a great story to share.
And this is why I like sharing it, because one of the things that really inspired my recovery was hearing other people's recovery stories. And I would search for podcasts about pain recovery or clips on YouTube and listen to other people who'd been through a similar thing, from being in that position of absolute desperation and thinking there was something terribly wrong with your body to being able to work through and get to the point where, you're really back on your feet.
It's taken you quite some time, and this is a solution for you. Do you think it might help others?
Look, I'm sure that, there are people who will have pain for the rest of their lives because of a physical or biomechanical reason. My pain, when it got to the chronic point, was solely around what was going on for me psychologically, and that was kind of amping up the pain signals. But other people will have physical or biological issues causing their pain in an ongoing way. But what I would say is that understanding pain and having pain education can still assist you, because it's that whole theory of knowledge is power. Like, the more you understand what's going on in your body, the better that you can do whatever it is you can to control, reduce it.
All right, let's get that information out there. Tell us about the Pain Revolution.
So the Pain Revolution comes out of the University of South Australia, and it was one of the first websites that I went to when I started on my pain journey, and they have free online resources. They have an education network for local pain educators in rural and remote locations around Australia, and there are local pain educators in Tasmania who work in all different fields and go through additional training so that they have contemporary understandings of pain science and can help people like me. So all of that information is available on their website, which is Pain Revolution, as well as Pain Australia is a really reputable website, has all sorts of resources and can point you to people who are in your state or territory that that are worth talking to if you're having difficulty with experiencing pain.
How would you describe your life now?
I actually feel grateful that I went through this experience because it taught me so much about understanding myself, about challenging information, about not blindly relying on, and I'm not having a go at the medical profession here because a vast majority of the medical profession are great, but not blindly accepting everything that I'm told in a medical setting and really understanding myself to empower myself. So I think my life's probably better than what it was before I went through this experience.
Wow, that's a huge admission to make.
Mm.
What are some of the messages that people have sent to you after they've heard your story and gone to solve their own pain problems? Have you been moved by some people's stories?
Look, I love getting stories from people who say, you know, you've inspired me to start this journey, or, you know, I was helped because of that journey. I do get people sending me medical questions as if I'm some sort of medical expert. And of course, I can't give that sort of information and I wouldn't want to. But there's a whole spectrum of people that get in contact with me.
But that must be gratifying too, because that's the reason why you share your story. You want to share the knowledge that, you know, your life's not over. There are answers and you got to find them.
Absolutely. And, you know, like I've said a couple of times, the best inspiration I got and one of the most helpful things was actually listening to other people who were able to recover or at least improve their lives by going down this path. So I want to be able to do that for other people, and that's why, I'm not a public speaker, it's not my forte, but when the opportunity to do TED came up, I thought, what a fantastic way to reach a lot of people at once.
Brilliant.
Mm.
And you'll reach a lot of people too through The Bright Side. For those listening who are living with chronic pain, what do you want them to get out of your story and experience?
A sense of hope, a sense that you can make small and even big improvements without medical interventions, and don't make your pain who you are. Don't make that the centre of your life.
Lauren, that's fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sabra.
That's Lauren Cannell, a remarkable woman from Tasmania who's patiently worked her way out of chronic pain. If you're listening and it's a difficult topic for you and you need some help, Lifeline is available on 13 11 14. If you're curious and want more information about the ABC's coverage on chronic pain, or perhaps more information about the pain revolution which helped Lauren, I'll leave you some information in the show notes. A new study about a special river has revealed the rare and endangered species that call it home aren't bouncing back like they should be. Queensland's Mary River is home to the prehistoric Australian lungfish and the white-throated snapping turtle. The first extensive survey of the region in decades has found the threats against those species and others are actually increasing. But scientists and traditional owners aren't giving up. They're joining forces to find new ways to bring back a range of precious freshwater species. Here's Stephanie Smale with more.
The water in this Mary River tributary is chest deep and freezing, but the team is plunging in to check the nets they've left overnight.
Oh, amazing! We got all four! That's so great!
They've netted four rare turtles, an endangered Mary River cod, and an Australian lungfish in the Sunshine Coast hinterland. Aquatic ecologist Luke Carpenter is tagging, weighing, and measuring them.
So that fish is now happy as Larry and ready to be let go into the river. And if we catch it again in a few years' time, maybe it'll be 10 kilometres upstream, maybe it'll be in the exact same spot.
The future of these animals and the river system they rely on is under new scrutiny by this team made up of scientists, land managers and traditional owners.
Yeah, he looks really good. He's really healthy, no lesions.
The team has done the first comprehensive fish survey of the Mary River catchment in about 30 years.
You know, this might be our last best chance to do something to recover these species before it's too late.
Professor Mark Kennard from Griffith University's Australian Rivers Institute says there's signs breeding levels aren't great.
We caught about 9,000 fish, but only 30 of those were Mary River cod. And most of those were quite large fish, so we're worried that they're not recruiting very well.
They didn't find many small Australian lungfish either, but endangered Mary River turtles turned up in places they hadn't before. Professor Kennard says it's looking like the years of hard work rehabilitating and restocking the Mary River haven't worked well enough yet. But there's still hope and new ways to help.
We're trialling different designs of hollow logs and woody structures, and then we're hoping that the cod will spawn in those and it'll provide good juvenile habitat for them so they can recruit into the adult population. For the young hatchling turtles, putting fine woody structures, snags and sticks into the river, they'll hatch, crawl straight down into the river and find really high quality refuge habitat.
The researchers camp together and share meals on each trip. The CEO of the Burnett Mary Regional Group, Tom Espinosa, says that's key to success.
In the modern world, in meeting rooms and things like that, you don't establish those connections. You keep it professional. Here, you have to engage on a whole different level.
Because you're sleeping next to each other in a tent.
Snoring next to each other, for me, primarily.
Collecting and sharing cultural knowledge is a priority too. Yinnaburra man BJ Murphy has been able to visit parts of the Mary River for the first time.
Working with these groups and being able to get out on country and slowing down and you know, sort of relearning. I think we're in a really good turning point, you know, within society where we're coming together, backing culture with science and trying to look after country together.
The team says as the study progresses, more farmers are granting access to their land.
They're very passionate and I'm happy to have them here.
The group is on Tom Ryan's place this trip.
We want to leave the land in much better condition than when I found it. It was okay, but if I can leave it that much better, that'll be important to me.
It's hoped the project will span at least a decade, with state and federal government funding currently keeping it afloat.
Stephanie Smale reporting there from Mary River in Queensland, and you can find more on that story and a link to Steph's article in the show notes. I've got a quiz for you. Don't sweat it too much, though. If I asked you how much money you've spent in the past week, would you know? Go on, give it a go. Even if you can't say for sure, it's likely you're spending more on goods and services than a year ago, and you're probably more aware of that in recent times because of the soaring cost of living. One woman who's tracking her spending to the dollar is Natasha Torza, a finance writer and blogger from Brisbane. It might sound dry, but it's not. It's struck a chord with lots of people. Tasha's gained a legion of fans with thousands following her spending online. Natasha, thanks for joining me on The Bright Side.
No problem.
What made you keep such a fine check on how much you were spending?
Well, prior to 2017, I had quite a bit of debt. I was a typical shopaholic, go to the shops every weekend, spend money on brunch, that sort of thing, pretty much every weekend. And I got to a point where I just didn't really have any money. I had my credit card hacked and they couldn't actually take anything from my account because it was maxed out, which was kind of funny, but also kind of good at the same time. And at that point I was like, what am I doing? Like, this needs to change.
Your blog is about wants and needs. How brutal are you when it comes to spending money on something you want rather than something you need?
Yeah, so it's definitely about wants and needs. I find that if you actually are taking the time to write things down or at least work out what you're spending, you can kind of find that difference between are you spending too much on the things that you want versus the things that you actually need just to function. So a lot of things that we spend really is the want stuff. So things like takeaway or, you know, going shopping or even going to the movies, those sort of things are people's wants, not their needs. But a lot of people are spending on those things. So I cut out all of that. I cut out all of the, you know, beauty expenses. I don't wear makeup. I don't get beauty treatments. I do my own hair, all those sort of things. I really cut back on all of that sort of stuff. And that's how I managed to save money, really.
And what's your financial situation like right now?
Well, my earnings have varied greatly since I started, because back when I started, I was working full time and I also took up a second job just to pay off my debt. So in a free year, I worked full time during the week, and then I worked anywhere between 10 and 20 hours on the weekends as well, just to pay off the debt. But now I only work 3 days a week because I've got my son who's only three. So once you start school, I might work a little bit more. But yeah, at the moment, I'm just working part-time. So my income has varied greatly since then, but I'm still managing to save. Usually the goal's around 10 grand a year. Hopefully in the next year or so, I'll be able to get into the market. It's a bit of a scary market at the moment, but I'm hoping that will be the goal to get into a home by the time Ryan starts school.
For someone listening now, how would you recommend they start tracking their spending?
I'd say take a really good hard look at what you're spending. And, you know, don't think that just because everybody else is doing, you know, things on the weekend, or just because everybody else is spending money on stuff, it doesn't mean you have to as well. Like, there's a lot of consumerism at the moment, and a lot of, you know, people buying things because they saw something on social media, or it's all that the TikTok stuff. It's just, yeah, we spend a lot of money on things that we really don't need to function. We've kind of learnt that you don't really need all the extra stuff, you know, to be able to have some fun. Like, you know, a lot of kids have way too many toys. I don't really buy toys unless it's birthdays or Christmases. And even then, I'll ask my family and we'll talk together about what we actually want to buy. And they'll go in together on buying bigger items, that sort of thing. Because a lot of, you know, they get so many things that they don't even really play with or need.
What's your advice to anyone who's tried but struggles to stick to a budget?
Sometimes people don't have success at the start because they either go too hard and they don't allow themselves to have any sort of wiggle room, which you need. You do need a little bit of money for yourself, even if it's only like 5 or 10%. If you just start small, if you just make little changes, then eventually you'll get a bit more accustomed to it, and then you can cut something else out, or you can keep going. You don't really want to make a huge 180 if you've been spending money going shopping, or maybe you do your hair, or, you know, the salon a lot. If you change that completely, you're just going to feel like you're missing out on everything. You don't have to follow the same path that everybody else is doing. Like, I've created a very sort of unconventional life for myself, you know, choosing to have a child on my own, choosing to live on my own and raise him. Going against the grain is always a little bit hard. I just try and think that it's my life. I do things that make me happy. As long as you're not harming anyone else, don't think about other people's opinions too much, because they don't have to live your life, you do.
Awesome. Natasha, thanks for joining me on The Bright Side. That's Natasha Torza, a finance writer and blogger who posts on Instagram as Tasha Gets Frugal. A few years ago, she pulled herself out of a $12,000 debt hole, and she now tracks her spending for all to see. And our thanks to Patrick White from ABC Everyday for bringing us that story. Now, just to be crystal clear on this, the ABC only covers general information and advice rather than giving specific information about your finances, i.e. I am not a financial advisor. Don't take advice specifically about your needs from me. If you're in financial hardship, you can call the National Debt Helpline on 1-800-007-007. And you can get in touch with me at any time on The Bright Side at your.abc.net.au if you've got a story that you'd like to share, or even just tell me about the kinds of stories you'd like to hear about on the podcast. Thanks to Hester for sending through a message. Here is what she wrote. Hi, Sabra. Just wanted to say thank you for starting the Bright Side series. It's so uplifting to hear some positive stories. I believe the world would be in a much better state if there was more of this. Thanks to you too, Hester. I'm glad you're enjoying the series and feeling a bit of hope yourself. Make sure you get in touch if you've got a story that you'd like to share. At The Bright Side at your.abc.net.au. And find me on the ABC Listen app, where I'll bring you more inspiring stories from around the country each week. I'm Sabra Lane. Until next time, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.